WVW Broadcast Network is pleased to present the Pry Report with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Dr. Pry was an intelligence officer with the Central Intelligence Agency and was responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, operational plans, military doctrine, threat perceptions, and developing U.S. paradigms for strategic warning. Dr. Pry is Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, a congressional advisory board dedicated to achieving protection of the United States from electromagnetic pulse, cyber warfare, mass destruction terrorism, and other threats to civilian critical infrastructures. Dr. Pry has also served on the staffs of several congressional commissions. Due to his expertise, he's been a guest on numerous national and international radio and television programs, such as Life, Liberty, and Levin, with host Mark Levin on the Fox News Channel, Lou Dobbs Tonight on Fox Business, and the BBC made his book War Scare into a two-hour TV documentary, and his book Electric Armageddon was the basis for a TV documentary by National Geographic. Dr. Pry has written numerous books on national security that include Blackout Wars, Apocalypse Unknown, Electric Armageddon, and War Scare, Russia and America on the Nuclear Brink. And now, here is your host, Dr. Peter Pry.
Welcome to another edition of the Pry Report, where we will deal in depth with national security issues. Today's topic is denuclearizing North Korea. President Trump has had two summits now with Kim Jong-un to discuss denuclearization. And when President Trump returned from his second summit with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, it was with nothing but vague hope his allegedly special relationship with Kim and promises of future economic prosperity for North Korea would tempt the little rocket man, as President Trump calls him, to give up nuclear missiles. And the pathway of negotiation continues, even though there seems to be little progress toward actual denuclearization. The West has, and our allies in the Pacific are taking great hope, and the State Department and the Washington national security and foreign policy establishments are encouraging President Trump to continue to go down this pathway of negotiation. That is always the preferred way of Washington, even if it's not doing anything to advance U.S. national security, apparently. Because it isn't doing much to advance U.S. national security. You know, Kim Jong-un has agreed to return U.S. bodies from the Korean War, and he's acted on that, but he's done little else to demonstrate a real interest in denuclearization. Even though he's stopped testing ICBMs and stopped testing nuclear warheads, that doesn't really amount to rolling back the North Korean nuclear threat. You know, by the summer of 2017, you know, now 2 years ago, North Korea had demonstrated that it does have reliable missiles that can reach any city in the United States. And it has also demonstrated in a succession of nuclear tests that it has nuclear weapons, including in September of 2017, a hydrogen bomb. A hydrogen bomb that it described as capable of super EMP attack. They even had a photograph of the hydrogen bomb missile warhead that could be delivered to the United States on their long-range missiles. And North Korea continues to build missiles and nuclear warheads. So the North Korean nuclear threat is growing, not going back. It's growing while we talk. Our president is being misled by State Department advisors down the same path of largely fruitless negotiation and strategic patience followed by Clinton, Bush, and Obama that resulted in North Korea successfully testing an H-bomb and having ICBMs capable of striking any American city. President Trump has unfortunately inherited from these past presidents, President Clinton, President Bush, and President Obama. You know, our current dire situation where we face a nuclear-armed North Korea that can make strikes on the United States. Although Pyongyang has suspended nuclear and missile testing during negotiations, dictator Kim Jong-un announced before negotiations North Korea achieved its technological testing objectives. And indeed, it did. This is almost certainly true. You know, we saw it ourselves in the summer of 2017 when North Korea successfully tested two ICBMs that could reach the United States using pretty advanced technology, technology that was surprisingly advanced for ICBMs produced by North Korea. And that's because the North Koreans have been getting help from the Russians and the Chinese. The North Korean nuclear threat is built basically around long-range missile technology, you know, that has been provided to them by Russia, and complex instrumentation like their transporter erector launchers that are used to launch these mobile ICBMs come from China. You know, it's no accident that North Korea is one of the few countries in the world with mobile ICBMs, which is a cutting-edge, highly sophisticated piece of offensive nuclear missile technology. Not even the United States has got mobile ICBMs. There's only three countries in the world with mobile ICBMs: Russia, China, and North Korea. And the only reason North Koreans have them is because they've been helped by Russia and China. And North Korea does not require the same technological standards of reliability and performance for nuclear missiles as does the United States. You know, they'll be happy, if their missiles are reliable enough so that they can get one EMP attack on the United States to end our civilization. They don't need to have a 90% reliability rate to do something like that. Contrary to the State Department, economic sanctions almost certainly are not working against North Korea. Russia, China, and others are helping North Korea circumvent economic sanctions. We don't even know how to accurately measure the effects of sanctions on the North Korean economy, let alone gauge their influence on the thinking of political leaders in Pyongyang. You know, and the proof of the ineffectiveness of economic sanctions is in your wallets and purses, as you watch this program. If you go through your dollar bills, you'll find that some of those dollar bills look like funny money. You know, you remember they've changed the way our money looks. Why is that? Well, that's because North Korea is the biggest and most successful counterfeiter of American money in the world. And whenever they need money, they just run the printing machines and make phony counterfeit American dollars, which they can sell with high gains to international crime, or use themselves to purchase whatever they need all around the world. So that's why we can't, not only can't we measure the effects of economic sanctions, but we also know, but seem to just ignore the fact, that North Korea is never short of money. They can only always manufacture our money, and their counterfeiting is so good, that's why we had to change the way our money looks. And we do know that North Korea has made enormous sacrifices, including starving thousands from nuclear missiles. Having made such sacrifices, you know, North Korea is almost certainly not going to give them up for promises from the United States. We should know economic prosperity as exists now in inconsequential Vietnam is no big temptation to psychopathic Kim Jong-un. You know, the State Department had the bright idea of having the first nuclear summit in Hanoi so Kim Jong-un could go to a fellow communist country that has liberalized and has provided economic prosperity. The idea was that Kim Jong-un would be perhaps be lured by that economic prosperity into giving up his nuclear missiles in exchange for the United States lifting sanctions and helping North Korea become economically prosperous. I mean, it's really an idiot idea. Kim Jong-un knows well, that China has one of the most successful economies in the world. That China has a form of state capitalism, call it fascism, that has made them economically prosperous. But Kim Jong-un has not been tempted by that to liberalize his economy or open himself up for economic prosperity. Indeed, the dictator of North Korea and his elites probably fear economic prosperity. They fear it would encourage freedom and embolden rival elites in North Korea to rise up and challenge Kim Jong-un's power. Kim Jong-un doesn't want to change the way his system works. He wants to make sure he stays in power. He wants to increase that power, turn North Korea into a world actor, a consequential world actor, by means of its nuclear firepower. He doesn't care if his country is economic bankrupt. He's proved that over decades. The whole Kim family has proved that over decades, that they've been willing to let their people starve to death and live a miserable existence as long as the elites are taken care of, so that they could get nuclear weapons, so that they would be a power to be dealt with in world affairs, and so that if necessary they could use those nuclear weapons, and not just to defend themselves, but to expand their power and realize their wildest dreams. And we don't know what the extent of those wildest dreams are. They're probably not limited just to the conquest of South Korea. Megalomaniac Kim wants to perpetuate his tyrannical hold on power and to overawe his foreign enemies. These goals he has achieved and is achieving by a Spartan existence for his people and by his world-shaking signature accomplishment and ultimate guarantor of power, nuclear missiles. So far, North Korea has made a few symbolic gestures, destroyed a nuclear test tunnel and a missile testing gantry, but done nothing irreversible and nothing that diminishes its nuclear missile threat. And indeed, one of the missile test facilities, the Sohae satellite launcher, they've started reconstructing it after these nuclear summits. That's sending a message to us, because the Sohae satellite launcher that orbited the KMS-3 and KMS-4 satellites poses the biggest nuclear threat to the United States. It gives North Korea the ability to launch satellites that could be nuclear armed for a surprise nuclear EMP attack, such as they have these two satellites in orbit now that pass over us on a regular basis. They could increase the constellation of satellites that are going over the United States, so there'd always be one hovering over the United States at some point, like a sword of Damocles constantly hanging over our head. And that's what their reconstruction of the Sohae satellite launch facility could symbolize, probably is symbolizing, basically pointing a gun at our head, even as they continue these pretend negotiations that are going on. Indeed, the intelligence community's recent worldwide threat briefing to Congress warns that North Korea continues building nuclear weapons and nuclear-armed missiles. So the North Korean nuclear missile threat is increasing. They're building more nuclear warheads. They're building more ICBMs and other kinds of missiles that could wage a nuclear war, even as they are engaged in the so-called negotiations. So what is Kim up to? What is Kim Jong-un up to? Well, Kim Jong-un's game is to use negotiations to buy time, to produce more nuclear missiles, to produce enough missiles and nuclear warheads that the U.S. will consider a disarming strike using conventional weapons as too risky. Kim Jong-un wants to remove and defeat any possibility of a U.S. military option to denuclearize North Korea. Thus, the U.S. would be forced to accept a mutual assured destruction relationship with North Korea and learn to live with a nuclear-armed Kim Jong-un. And Kim's strategy is succeeding. You know, the Democrat Party appears already to have accepted that outcome. Susan Rice and General Clapper, who are national security spokesmen to the Democrat Party, they were President Obama's most senior national security advisors. Both of them have said that a nuclear-armed North Korea is now irreversible. There's nothing we can do to stop them from having these nuclear weapons. It's too risky to disarm them, and that we basically have to accept a mutual assured destruction relationship with North Korea. So Kim Jong-un is achieving his goals. He has already gotten the Democrat Party to surrender to his strategy and accept the idea of living with a nuclear-armed North Korea. The Democratic Party, as I said, has surrendered to Kim Jong-un. Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, and former Director of National Intelligence General James Clapper all say nuclear North Korea is irreversible, and the U.S. must accept a mad relationship with dictator Kim. The only reason Kim Jong-un is negotiating with President Trump is because he fears Trump is the first president brave enough to denuclearize North Korea forcibly by military means. Before these negotiations began, it looked like President Trump was actually going to denuclearize North Korea with a conventional strike. He had three aircraft carriers arrayed near North Korea. I wrote an article back in September of 2017 that described several conventional non-nuclear military options we had for disarming a nuclear-armed North Korea. And those military options would have entailed using three aircraft carriers. It would have only taken a few hours, because at that point, North Korea didn't have that many long-range missiles to threaten the United States. Even today, they probably have someplace between 12 and 20 long-range ICBMs. They probably have between 30 and 60 medium-range ballistic missiles. Altogether, I calculated they had perhaps about 150 targets that we would have to take out and could take out with three aircraft carriers in a few hours. And it would roll back the nuclear threat to the United States so that the American people would not have to face ICBMs or satellites coming from North Korea anymore. But if Kim can buy enough time through negotiations to build 50 to 100 mobile ICBMs, he hopes President Trump will surrender and accept a nuclear-armed North Korea and mutual assured destruction relationship with North Korea. Gambling that a thermonuclear holocaust with North Korea can be avoided by mutual assured destruction is a very bad bet that will probably kill millions of Americans. What to do? We should accelerate U.S. nuclear deterrent modernization. We need to accelerate our deployment of ICBMs, new bombers, new submarine ballistic missiles that are already planned and that we're moving forward. Right now, the new nuclear triad that we rely upon to deter nuclear attacks is really old to the point of obsolescence. And the current plans, even under President Trump, it's going to be more than a decade before we have new systems in place. We need to accelerate that. We need to also start building nuclear weapons that are advanced technologically and not continue to rely on our old Cold War era nuclear weapons that are 30 or 40 years old. New generation nuclear weapons is what needed by the United States. Super EMP weapons, X-ray nuclear weapons, clean nuclear weapons that can be used on the battlefield. Most importantly, we need space-based missile defenses. And most importantly, we need to harden the U.S. critical infrastructures against electromagnetic pulse and cyber attacks. These steps will punish and pressure China and Russia for helping nuclearize North Korea. They will punish and pressure China and Russia for supporting their client states' intransigence and to devalue all nuclear missiles, including those of China and Russia, to make them for the first time pay a huge strategic price for their support of North Korea. Not just economic sanctions, but the thing they really value most is their nuclear strength. And if we can undervalue their nuclear strength by increasing our nuclear deterrent and by space-based missile defenses and EMP and cybersecurity hardening that would possibly even render their nuclear missile forces obsolete, that is a nightmare for China and Russia. You may recall the Russians themselves admit that the single thing that was most important in winning the Cold War was Ronald Reagan's decision to go forward with the Strategic Defense Initiative and deploy space-based defenses. They knew they couldn't compete with that technologically, and that threatened the basis of their nuclear military power. Unfortunately, the Clinton administration canceled the Strategic Defense Initiative, so it was never deployed. We never deployed a system, even though one was ready to go, called Brilliant Pebbles. An immediate step we should take is shoot down North Korea's two satellites, the KMS-3 and KMS-4, that orbit over the United States regularly and may be armed for surprise EMP attack, posing an existential threat. The Congressional EMP Commission recommends destruction of these satellites to eliminate the greatest and most immediate potential nuclear menace to the United States from North Korea. Destroy the satellites in a surprise attack with no publicity afterwards, so to let Kim Jong-un save face, but privately notify Kim Jong-un the U.S. will not tolerate any more North Korean satellites, and that our patience is running out for progress toward North Korean complete denuclearization. This is the least escalatory military option. Destruction of those two satellites is the least escalatory military option for denuclearization, as it entails no strikes on North Korea, no strikes on the North Korean homeland. Yet destroying the satellites would be the first time any president struck back against the growing North Korean nuclear threat, and would prove the U.S. is willing to act forcefully. It would prove the United States' warnings about denuclearizing North Korea are not just a matter of words, but that we are willing to back our words with force. If Kim Jong-un is so pathological he would start a new Korean war over shoot down of his satellites, better to deal with him now before he gets 100 ICBMs. Shoot down of North Korea's satellites would at a stroke increase the credibility of U.S. resolve to Russia, China, and Iran, and reassure allies worldwide at a time when U.S. military power is still unrecovered from years of neglect by the Obama administration. Some will protest, acting militarily amidst negotiations is unprecedented and will reinforce President Trump's image of being reckless and unpredictable. But America has never been more threatened from as many quarters as now. Our conventional and nuclear forces have never faced such great challenges as now, and are now overmatched on many fronts. Our own Department of Defense and RAND Corporation, calculates, that Russia could overrun NATO frontline states in 48 hours. In 48 hours, they could achieve victory over many NATO frontline states. And the Russians know that. They have such a vast preponderance of conventional and military forces. China is defying the world court, has been defying the world court for more than a year now, by annexing the South China Sea, which is one of the world's most important trade routes. Trade to our Pacific allies, to North America and South America, passes through their area. And there are vast oil and mineral resources in that area that China is claiming for itself. And it's basically annexed that illegally. And we know that North Korea, having threatened us and having satellites orbiting overhead, how much more of a clear and present danger can you face than having North Korea satellites orbiting overhead? Even if they're not nuclear armed, even if they're just practice, it clearly demonstrates a capability that North Korea has that should be unacceptable to us. So we live in times that are more dangerous than the most dangerous period of the Cold War because of these technological threats, and because of our enemies are more numerous. And we haven't even talked about Iran, which is another probable nuclear threat. I and many other analysts disagree with the Washington establishment view that Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons yet. Even the Washington establishment concedes that Iran is only 1 year away from the bomb. I think the evidence is pretty overwhelming that Iran probably already not only has nuclear weapons, but probably has nuclear missiles and has had them for a long time, has had them as a clandestine force. Indeed, it could be that the Iranian nuclear arsenal is almost as advanced or as advanced as the North Korean nuclear arsenal. North Korea and Iran, by the way, are strategic partners by treaty. So drastic step measures are needed. You know, we need to start rolling back these threats somewhere. And we should start with North Korea, which is one of the most threatening of these actors, while we still can. You know, at this dangerous moment, America's greatest asset may be the personality of our courageous, bold, surprising president. The only thing standing between us and a nuclear war with one of these actors might well be the personality of President Trump, because they fear that this guy is willing to use U.S. military power. If America's enemies fear President Trump, good. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Pry Report.